The shiur today is on minhagim, customs. And I want to address the following question. How serious are minhagim? Let's say I started a minhag to wear white shirts every Shabbos and I want to stop that minhag, or I start keeping Pas Yisrael and I want to stop, I want to go to the mikvah every Yom Tov, every Yom Tov, every Erev Shabbos, I want to stop, I want to start learning Mishnah Yomi, so then I want to stop. It seems that our intuition is that you can stop these minhagim. What about other kind of minhagim? What about the minhag like not eating gebrux on Pesach? Can you undo that minhag if you inherited it? What about kidneys? You don't want to keep kidneys anymore. Can you undo that minhag? What about, is Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios, is Yom Tov Sheni in the diaspora minhag? It seems the Gemara says minhag of Asechem Biyadechem. Can we stop practicing a minhag, a custom, if we don't want to follow the custom anymore? So the way I want to analyze this shiur is I want to first speak about two different extremes. I want to speak about personal minhagim on one extreme and minhagim of Chazal, and then discuss three categories that may fit somewhere in the middle: communal customs, ethnic customs, and family customs. And so we get a better understanding of how customs operate, why are they binding, and can you undo them? So regarding a personal minhag, it seems pretty clear that a personal minhag functions as a sort of neder, a sort of a promise. The Gemara in the Nedarim Daf Tes Vav Bet Aleph says, quotes a brisa that says, "Devar hamutar v'achem nogim bo miser, iyata rasha latirim bifnehem, shenemar lo yachel devaro." Things that are permitted, but others are accustomed to observe a prohibition with regard to them, you may not permit these matters before those people. You cannot tell them that once they started practicing this minhag that they can just simply stop it without doing anything. And he quotes a pasuk, lo yachel dvaro, you should not profane your word, which seems to indicate that it's a neder. The Ran points out in Nedarim, Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis, that this is only a rabbinic prohibition to violate a minhag, a personal minhag, because it's not a real neder. It's not a neder gamor. Neder gamor is when you swiftly say, I hereby make a neder, I hereby make a promise that I'm not going to eat meat or drink wine. But if you simply engage in a certain practice, so then you create a minhag. The Shulchan Aruch clarifies in Siman Reish Yadal Seif Aleph that we're talking about a scenario where you, at the time that you began to practice the minhag, your intent was to keep the minhag forever, even if you kept the minhag once. So then that is a binding minhag. It is as if you accepted the minhag b'toras neder as a neder, as a promise. And therefore, you would need hataras nedarim. You need to annul the vow in order to undo the personal minhag. The Shach in Sifkat Aleph there just points out that a neder is binding if nagu b'hen iser machmas siyag v'geder precious. You're engaged in this practice of neder because of some fence or some feeling of wanting to be on a holier level, a more separatist, purified level. So if that's the reason why you engage in this practice and your intent is to do that forever, this practice, so then it's binding b'toras neder. And if you want to undo it, you need hataras nedarim. And now another, I think on the other side, the other extreme, would be a minhag, a custom by Chazal. And the Rambam in Hilchos Marmim, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph and Beis, tells us that there's a mitzvah to listen to what the rabbis say, and being the high court, the Beis HaGadol B'Yerushalayim, the high court. And if you don't, you violate the Torah prohibition of Lo Tasur, you don't deviate from what they tell you. This is in Parsha Shoftim, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph. And included in the pronouncements that you have to follow from the rabbis includes gezeros, takaros, and minhagos, decrees, enacts, edicts, and customs. So there's something called a minhag chazal. And the takana seems to be an enactment. Maybe near Hanukkah is a takana, something positive they tell you to do. A gezeira is a decree. Don't do this because it might lead to that. Don't move a muksa item because it might lead to something, or it's not in the spirit of Shabbos. Minhag seems to connote something that's bottom up, as opposed to gzeros and takanos, which seems to go top down. Minhag seems to be something that the community practice, and now the rabbis are formulating it. But we have to follow it based on the Torah obligation of that lotaser. We shouldn't deviate from what they tell you, and also that we're supposed to listen. Whatever they tell you. So this seems to be a Torah obligation. As a side point, an interesting side point, the Rambam writes that the difference between a minhag and a takana is the Rambam Hilchos Brachos Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Tezayin says that anything that's based on a minhag, even if it's a minhag of a Nevi'im, like taking an Arava on the seventh day of Sukkos, or a minhag like Kriyas Halel on Rosh Chodesh, we don't make a bracha on it. So what's interesting, and why would you not make a bracha on a minhag? So Rashi seems to say, Rashi in the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Mem Daled Amud Aleph, says that we don't make a bracha on a minhag because you can't say vitzivanu. If something is a minhag, so this is something that the community accepts. It's not something that's top down, the rabbis commanded. So it's not included in Lotasu. That's why Rashi understands it. Again, the Rambam may buy into this notion as well that maybe even a minhag of Chazal, if they're enacting a minhag of Chazal, so if the Chazal are formalizing a minhag, it may not be based on Lotus, or maybe. However, it's not so simple. When we discuss the Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios, the obligation to keep 2 days Yom Tov in the diaspora, so the Gemara in Be'ah, Daf Dalet Amud Beis, says that why do we keep it nowadays when we have a fixed calendar? It's not based on witnesses coming to see if there's a new moon. It's based on a fixed calendar and that everyone has access to, even in the diaspora. So the Gemara says, Hizaru ben minhag v'seichem b'yadeichem, be careful with the custom of your ancestors. Zin the Gazru Shema Dev Asul Kukule. Maybe there might be times where they're going to enact a religious persecution that we're not allowed to engage in these practices of having these calculations, and therefore people won't know when to observe the holiday. We'll go back to the situation where we need witnesses to tell us, and because we're going to lose these precious calculations, and therefore keep 2 days. And the Ran views this as a takara. The Ran views this as a takara that the rabbis established. Okay, it's pretty simple. According to the Ran, we make brachos on the second day of Yom Tov. We make kiddush, we make brachos on the second day of Yom Tov because it's a takara, it's not a minhag. However, the Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov, Perek Aleph, Halacha Chaf Aleph writes that the fact that we engage in 2 days Yom Tov is a minhag, it's a custom. So why then, according to the Rambam, if it's a minhag, why are we making brachos? Why are we making kiddush? Why are we making brachos on the second day of Yom Tov relating to the holiday? So the Griz or the Rambam writes, and it's not a din in the fact that we don't recite that because of lo tasur that we don't make a bracha out of minhag. That's not how the Rambam understands it. He has a different way of looking at this. He says that when Chazal were deciding how to characterize different rules that they came up with, and they would say, keep this mitzvah, follow this practice, and we're calling this a takana. So when they came to Ner Chanukah, they called this a mitzvah d'rabbanan. They defined it as mitzvah d'rabbanan, and they said, okay, you make a bracha. You make a bracha because they defined it as a mitzvah, so they make a bracha. However, when it came to minhagos that didn't have a shame mitzvah, but a shame minhag, the status of a minhag, then we don't make a bracha on it. However, Yom Tov Sheni, the rabbis did call this a minhag, I guess because it was bottom up. But there are many mitzvos which operate because of the fact that we keep a second day Yom Tov, like matzah, halal. So these mitzvos, these mitzvos, which we eat matzah, zechiyah of matzah the second day of Pesach, zechiyah of halal, let's say the second day of Pesach as well. So they have a status of a mitzvah midrabanan because on the first day of Yom Tov, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa to keep these mitzvos of, let's say, matzah and halal. So therefore, on the second day of Yom Tov, the rabbis define these as mitzvos d'rabanan, even though the institution of Yom Tov Sheni is a minhag, but these are mitzvos d'rabanan. They call them mitzvos because on Yom Tov Rishon, these are mitzvos d'oraisa. And once they have a status of a mitzvah on Yom Tov Sheni, so then we're going to even have Kiddush. When we make Kiddush Yom Tov Sheni, we're gonna recite a bracha because it's all one package. So Yom Tov Sheni is a little bit of an exception of the rule, even though it's a minhag, since it's related to many mitzvos that we do on Yom Tov Sheni, which are patterned after Yom Tov Rishon, which are mitzvos. So therefore, we're going to recite a bracha. In any case, the Rambam understands that a minhag that was formalized by Chazal is obligatory upon each and every one of us based on a Torah obligation of lo tasur, don't deviate from what the rabbis say. So the question is, once we have these two extremes, on the one hand a minhag, a personal minhag that's based on neder, and the other hand, which you have a taras adarim, versus a minhag established by Chazal, which you have to keep based on lo tasur, there's no hataras adarim, you can't undo that minhag. So how do we view these other customs? How do we view communal customs, ethnic customs, family customs? So what about, so let's go one by one. Communal customs. So there's Gemara Pesachim Daf Nun Amud Beis, which talks about Bnei Baishad. There's a dispute as to what or who Baishad, what does Baishad mean? So some of Farshim, the Rivash, for example, believes that Baishad is a place. So let's say some say it's Beit Sha'ad. So the Gemara says, "Bnei Baishad Dogu Delo Havu Atzlid Bitzur Litzid of Bali Shabsa." So the people, for the residents of Beit Sha'ad, had the practice they wouldn't travel from Tzur to Tzidon on Erev Shabbos because maybe they're nervous they wouldn't get back. So there was a chumra they kept upon themselves. Also, Benayu Kavid Rav Yochanan. Their children came before Rav Yochanan. Amar Lo, they said to him, "Av Hasid Efshar Lahu Adalo Efshalon." Yeah, our parents were able to do that, but we can't do that. We can't handle this chumra. So the Gemara says, Amar Lahu, Rabbi Yochanan said back to them, Kavar Kiblu Avosechem Aleihem. Your ancestors already accepted this upon themselves. Shnei Rav, the Pasuk says, Shema B'ni Musa Avicha V'alti Tosh Torah Sibecha. So he quotes the Pasuk of Mishlei, that you have to listen to the teachings of your father, and don't deviate from the Torah of your mother. So based on this Pasuk, it seems that we have to keep communal customs. This, and therefore the Bnei Baishad, they inherited this custom of their parents, it seems, and therefore if the parents or at least when they're living perhaps in this community, then they have to keep these customs. In fact, that's how the Rivash understands this. The Rivash in Chelek Alek Siman Mem quotes the Ramban, who speaks about this Mishpat HaChirem, who says that when the Rabbim accepts a minhag upon themselves, so they're accepting upon themselves and on their children, but even with respect that the and he writes that even if they accept it upon themselves to make offense, so then the children are obligated, and the proof for this is the story of Bnei Baishad. And he writes that those people who come from outside the city to live in the city, so they are like the people of the city, they're obligated to follow their takana. And if they leave, then they don't have to follow the local takana. So in other words, the Rivash says that the obligation to keep a communal custom is based on living in the community. If you don't live in the community anymore, then you don't have to keep it. Rav Schachter has an article on this subject, and he cites the Rad in the Shulchan Aruch, who says that why does an individual who lives in the city who inherits this minhag, why does he have to keep this minhag? So he says that an individual who starts a minhag, so he's the Bala Neder. So he's the one who sort of owns the neder, so he can annul his own neder. But when it comes to the minhag atzibur, a custom of the Tzibor, you can't have individual make a Taras Adarim to overturn the Bidigot Tzibor. Because if you want to do a Taras Adarim, you need the Bala Neder has to ask the Beis Din to annul his Neder. And who's the Bala Neder? That's a Tzibor. The Tzibor, the Bala Neder. And the Tzibor is not looking to annul their Neder. So therefore, this individual comes to try to annul his Neder. That's not binding. So as long as you're in the community, then you have to keep this because the Tzibor created a Neder and you cannot annul it. In Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shachter quotes from Moshe Soloveitchik, who brings a Rambam who says that that it's not simply like a Neder. It's a different view because he says that the Midag at Tzibor doesn't apply with something that's uncommon. And if it's based on Neder, what's the difference if it's Matzo or not Matzo, if it's common or not common? So he explained that this is based on the reason why you have to keep a Midagot Tzibor is based on the Rambam in Pergimel Halacha and Pergimel from Hilchos Tshuva Halacha Yud Aleph, that if you're Porish Midarche Tzibor, if you separate from the ways of the community, then you don't have a portion of the world to come. So this is a very severe Avera to be Porish Midarche Tzibor. The Torah was given to Klal Yisrael as a nation, as an Am, and not as individuals. And therefore, we have a responsibility to be part of the Tzibor. So if we don't follow the Minhag of the Tzibor in a clearly recognized, it's clearly recognizable, then you're separating from the ways of the Tzibor. So if it's something that's not common, okay, that doesn't happen that often, so you're not really Polish, you're not really separate from Darchei Tzibor. But if something is bolate, something is very clear that Tzibor is taking on this minhag, and you're not following this minhag, so that would be a violation of Porish Midarchei Tzibor, separating from the minhag of the Tzibor. It seems that in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Yudal, Sif Beis points out that in fact, if you leave this place to go to a different place, then you're not bound by the minhag of the community because you're no longer living in the community. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in Evan Ezra Chelek Aleph Siman Nuntes, who writes that in America that people gather from so many different communities, there's no real fixed minhag anymore. There's no real communal minhag anymore because there's in every town, in every city, it's a mixture of many different communities where people came from in Europe. It could be in certain, let's say, local Hasidic communities where everyone is one community, everyone has one minhag, so maybe then it might apply. But in most communities, the five towns, Teaneck, Oceanside, in most communities, you have people coming from different communities in Europe where they came from, so there's no real local custom. So this is not, the communal custom is not generally so applicable when it comes to private practices. What about universal customs, or let's say an ethnic minhag? So one of the most popular ethnic minhagim that people want to undo is at least Ashkenazim want to undo, or some Ashkenazim want to undo, is kitnios. Say, what if the reason of kitnios doesn't apply anymore? Can't we simply stop keeping this minhag? So this is not simply a local minhag. This is a minhag of Ashkenazim. Rabbi Akiva Eger, he wrote very sharply against the minhag of kitnios. He was Ashkenazi. And in Siman Tafnun Gimel, he speaks up very sharply. And he writes about how his father was in so much distress. He said, if he would love to get rid of this minhag garua, this very bad custom. And he says that it actually, this custom of refraining from eating kitnios actually leads to a lot of problems. First of all, because kitnios are not common, since if you don't have kitnios, you can't have kitnios on Pesach, then how are you going to eat? You have to bake a lot of matzah. So especially if you're very poor and you can't afford meat or chicken, so you have to bake a lot of matzah, and you're baking a lot, and probably the supervision wasn't so great in baking matzahs, people breaking their own matzahs, and you're probably going to end up violating chametz, because you're going to have to do it very quickly and bake a lot, and people won't be so careful. But so by being strict with the minhag of kitnios, we're going to be lenient when we're going to potentially violate Isuri Karis of owning matzah. Additionally, writes that matzah is very expensive. Kitnios is very inexpensive, so it's really a financial drain on the poor people of the community. And he says, oh, if only we were able to get rid of this very bad chumrah, and he really speaks out strongly against it. So if anyone who can cancel out this custom, yehi chalki imol, let my portion be with him. Halavai yiskima amudei gedoli ador b'mchos alaz. If only the great sage of this generation would agree with me, and he wants, and he wrote, v'chol yomayo yisi obed mitzapa masa yavo liyadi v'afarsem das avi mori. All my days I stood waiting for him to publicize the view of my father and my Rebbe. To uproot this court of stringencies, which the people cannot endure. And he speaks very strongly against the meaning of Kitnios. But Rekiv Eger, and he had good reason. The reasons that he speaks about may not apply nowadays, but he spoke very sharply against this minhag. And yet he was not able to undo this. Because this is like a minhag, some refers to as minhag ha'eda. It's a minhag by the entire community. This is a little bit, you also have perhaps Chayim Rabbeinu Gershon, let's say. It's another example where the Ashkenazi community agreed that a man cannot have more than one wife at a time. Again, how long did that Chayim last? There's some discussion about that. But these are not simply local communal minhagim. These are more ethnic minhagim, all of Ashkenaz. What's the theory behind this? How does this work? How does this operate? Where does this come from? I asked Rabbi Jeremy Weider, and he said that he points out that you don't find this in the Gemara. According to the Gemara, if I don't live in a particular community, then I'm not bound by that community's minhag. And then in the medieval period, then we start having this idea of an ethnic minhag. In times of Gemara, you didn't have Ashkenazim and Sfarim. So in the medieval period, you start to get an idea of ethnicity and minhagim attached to that. And then with the modern period, so the migrations of Jews from different places into one new place, that's when we invented this category of this kind of minhag of an ethnic minhag. So this is really a new category. It seems to develop in response to a non-existent alternative. Linguistically, maybe the B'nai Baishan, they use that as precedent, or maybe the idea of minhag of aseichem b'yadeichem, but again, that's not really what this is. This is a new idea, this idea of ethnic minhag, but we felt very strongly about it, and even Rekiv Eger could not undo that when it came to Kitnios. Professor Schwartz told me that this might be based on there's a Ramban in the Pasuk Kol Chema Sheyachram in Parsh B'chukosai, where he seems to talk about this power that the Tzibur has based on this idea of the Chayram, that the Tzibur has the power to make a Chayram, to make certain rules binding on its members. So that is the basis of that essentially is the basis of this idea of ethnic minhagim. It's interesting, the Maharil, when he discusses Kitnios, he shouldn't say, oh, since there's no Issa Daraisa, you have to worry about this. Because he says that the whole gezerah, the whole the gezerah rabbanon, if you violate a rabbinic prohibition, you violate lo tasur. And in this piece, the Maharil seems to indicate that he uses this language of gezerah, and that it sort of falls on the whole edah, minhag ha'edah, again an ethnic minhag. So he wants to say that somehow it's maybe based on that as well. But this is a new idea that came up during the medieval period. But it seems that once the Ada agrees to it and it takes root for many, many years, then it seems that we don't undo that minhag. When it comes to family minhagim, are we bound by family minhagim? So with this, there's a Gemara in Chulin Daf Kuf Hei Amud Aleph. And here the Gemara says, Mar Ukva says, Ana laha milsa chala barcham legabi abba. With respect to this one matter, I am considered like vinegar, the son of wine, regarding my father. Because why? Because my father, when he would eat meat, he wouldn't cheese until the next day. But for me, If I would eat meat, I would eat dairy in the next meal. And this Gemara is generally understood to say that Marukva was following the halacha, his father was just engaging in a chumrah. And so this seems to indicate you don't have to follow necessarily the practice of your father. The Pri Chadash, in fact, cites the Masa, say from Masa Melech, who brings this Gemara to say that you're not, if your father engaged in a certain practice because of Midas Chasidus, it's not bound, you're not bound by your father. And the Chavos Yar and Simon Kuf Chavav, this is a Pri Chadash in Archaim, Simon Tuf Tzadi Vav, Sif Beis, and the Chavos Yar and Simon Kuf Chavav says, can't be that any time you have certain people who are just exceedingly pious and they take on certain pious practices that should be bound by their children. It can't be. And the truth is, there is a view that that if a father wants to impose his practice on his children, then he does have the ability to do so. The Pre-Toar, Chaim ibn Attar, understands that Bnei Baishan is not a location. Baishan is not a location, but it's the name of a family. And there, if it's a family, so it seems that the father can, father wish to impose his practice on his children, his descendants are obligated to continue his practices. Now, again, if father doesn't want to impose on his children, he just wants to keep himself, then it's not binding on his children. But if he wants to, he can bind it on his children. It seems that is not the common practice. Rav Moshe Feitzin is a tshuva in Archaim Chelek Gimel Siman Samach Dalet regarding Gebrux. Rav Moshe seems to say that if let's say he lives in a community where none of them eat Gebrux, and that was his family minhag, the son can do a Tara Sedarim if he no longer lives in the community, doesn't want to follow his father's minhag. It's interesting, when I spoke to different people, can you rely on Rav Moshe? Some were not so comfortable. Rav Rimon told me if there's a great need, then we could. That's not such an old custom, like Kitnios. Rav Yonah Reis thought that, no, you should be bound by a family custom, unless you get married to a different family. Let's say if your family does not eat kibrox, and you marry into a family that does eat kibrox, so then, okay, you're not abandoning your family minhag. You're not abandoning your family minhag in favor of nothing, but you're just joining another. When two families get married, so some people follow one family's minhag, some people follow another family's minhag. So he thought that would be okay, but otherwise he's not so comfortable with it. Rav Simon told me, he thinks that he wrote a great book, a great sefer on minhagim, so I spoke to him, and he thinks that we can technically not follow the parents' custom, but it isn't recommended. It seems like, unless there's a real need. I think that someone reminded me that years ago, someone asked me if he could do, if he his parents, he grew up in a household that did not eat kibrox, and he wants to eat kibrox on Pesach, can he do it? So I asked Rabbi Willig, and Rabbi Willig said that if he asks his father gives him permission, then he's allowed to do a Taras Adarim and change the minhag of his parents. I think there is even though there might be opportunities, there might be allowances to change minhagim that you grew up with, that you inherit, there's a strong value to keeping minhagim. The Shla Kadosh in this week's Parsha talks about the fact that you had 12 Nesiim and they each brought the same korban, but each one had his own kavana in bringing a korban. And each kavana was litikun kiyum olam, was to fix the world, to make the world better, and the idea is that everyone has their own perspective. We all have the shared goal to connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Different people do it different ways, and the Shla Kadosh compares the 12 tribes having different intentions as 12 Tzirufei Shem Hashem, different configurations that all emerge from Shem Hashem. And so this idea that if applied this to Minhagim, it suggests that you have different customs from Shvatim, from different ethnic groups, from communities, from generations. They're meaningful expressions of a shared view of yearning to connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So this, everyone has their own practice, and if you're part of you're part of a minhag, then it's actually very beautiful because you contribute together with all the other minhagim to create a a symphony of different legitimate ways to connect with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. The Rav Chaim Pelagi in Sefer Masa Chaim Minhagim Siman Reish Gimel, he said you really shouldn't change Minhagim, fix Minhagim, because if basically you say okay, I'm going to decide if I want to keep this, I don't want to keep this, then and you're not going to really take consideration that about someone who came before you. So today you'll cancel one minhag, tomorrow you'll cancel two minhagim, next day. And all the minhagim, you can think, oh, that's all silly, and I'm going to make my own new Torah. And then it potentially leads to rejecting Isurim. Not simply minhagim, but Isurim. This idea of keeping minhagim of the past reflects a desire to appreciate our Mesorah, to appreciate our tradition, to appreciate our values, and therefore really absent a very strong need. It's beautiful to keep Minhagim, and it's very important for keeping and feeling passionate about continuing our Mesorah.